Hey y'all, welcome to this week's episode of Unfit to Print. I'm your host, Amber Athey. I'm the Washington editor for The Spectator and a senior Blankley fellow with the Steamboat Institute. Before we get started, make sure that you guys go ahead and subscribe to the Daily Caller's YouTube channel and hit that notification bell, and also search for the podcast on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if you guys like Unfit to Print, then you will love my work over at The Spectator. You can get 10% off a subscription today by heading to spectator.us/subscribe and using my discount code Amber. Just a quick update for people who may have been wondering why there was not an episode of the podcast last week. That is because I was moving. I am still in Northern Virginia, but I'm in a different neighborhood and I'm in a new apartment, obviously. That's where I'm sitting right now. And although I regret that I wasn't able to film last week, I am very excited about my new digs. As you guys can probably tell, I have a lot more room to film. I can take up my whole living room and kitchen area, which is great. Before, I was basically tucked away in this tiny corner in my bedroom, and once my filming equipment was set up, I was unable to get out of that corner unless I basically crawled over my bed and did like some gymnastics to get out of the room. So it's nice to have a lot more space to film. The lighting is great in here because I have this huge window behind the camera. So hopefully the production quality is going to increase a lot while I'm here, and that will provide a better viewing and listening experience for you guys. So again, although last week I certainly miss not being able to film, I'm overall very happy and excited about what this move means for me moving forward. So with that, let's go ahead and get into the content, because we did miss a big story last week that is still ongoing, and that is, of course, the Hunter Biden email story. And as of the time of filming this, the New York Post is still blocked from posting on Twitter because they have published this story and put it on social media. And it's been 7 days to the time of filming that they have been blocked. And Twitter initially didn't give a very good reason for why they were blocking the story. And so the obvious assumption was that they were just being biased towards the fact that this is a story that's damaging to Joe Biden. And it really came across as if they were providing an in-kind campaign contribution to the Biden campaign, because they were actively censoring this story that was damaging to him and to his family. Then Twitter tried to backtrack and apologize for blocking the story, but they still have the New York Post blocked, and they claimed it's because the story contains personal information, because it has things like Hunter's email address. But most of the information that's in there is already public. And you guys actually might remember, I did some reporting on this back when it happened, but there was a video that was on Twitter that showed a guy chasing down this woman in her car and claiming that she was a Karen and that she said a racial slur to him while they were battling each other in traffic. And he posted her license plate as well as the outside of her house on Twitter in this video. And at the time I asked Twitter if this violated their policy on personal information, and they said that it did not, and that license plates don't count for that. So let's go ahead and watch that video just so you guys can get a refresher and see just how hypocritical Twitter apparently is in enforcing this policy about personal information. Watch.
You don't understand!
Karen,
you
are you okay?
Understand what happened!
Can you explain to me calmly?
No, because you're attacking me right now!
I'm not attacking you. Ma'am, you flicked me off.
You're ready to take it!
Guys, this is her license plate number. She lives
no,
here. This is her address.
No.
Again, the reason I show that video is because it demonstrates Twitter's hypocrisy in enforcing certain policies when it is related to a political position that they agree with, which is harassing and doxing white people, versus a political position that they disagree with, which is going after Joe Biden, who is their preferred political candidate. And before we get into more of how the media responded to this story, let's just quickly go through what the allegations in the story were. So one of the biggest emails that was displayed in this New York Post story was Hunter Biden discussing with his Ukrainian business partner the idea of setting up a meeting with his father, who was then Vice President Joe Biden. And the email actually suggested that the meeting already took place. The Biden campaign responded to this not by challenging the authenticity of the email, but by claiming that there was no meeting on his official schedule with this Ukrainian businessman. Now, my guess is if his son was organizing some type of corrupt meeting with his business partner, he would probably want to keep that off the official schedule and make it more of a hush-hush type affair. So this doesn't really tell us anything. It doesn't verify that a meeting didn't occur, and it doesn't challenge, again, the authenticity or the veracity of the New York Post reporting in terms of whether or not that email is real. Joe Biden was further asked about this during a press pool situation, and here was how he responded.
And Mr. Biden, what is your response to the New York Post story about your son, sir?
I know you'd ask it. I have no response. It's another smear campaign. Right up your alley. Those are the questions you always ask.
So Biden attacked the reporter, which was CBS's Bo Erickson, for asking the question, but did again not challenge whether or not these emails were real. And poor Bo, his news director, Steve Holzer, tweeted at him saying, "The right question is, what do you think of the report that Rudy Giuliani used Russian disinformation to try to smear your family 19 days before an election? There, fixed it for you." So this is a CBS News news director chastising their own reporter for asking about arguably one of the biggest stories and an obvious October surprise just a few weeks before the presidential election. And this was not the only person in the media to suggest that this story was Russian disinformation. No one has provided evidence that these emails were faked or that they were sourced from the Russians. Early reporting suggests they came from a computer shop that Hunter Biden dropped his laptop off at and then forgot to pick up. But Yamiche Alcindor from NPR, Rachel Maddow from MSNBC, Joy Reid, multiple former intelligence officials, including James Clapper, have all stated on cable news that this is a Russian disinformation op that is being run through Rudy Giuliani and then making its way to the president. Director of National Intelligence John Ratcliffe has since said that there is no intelligence suggesting that this email dump is the result of Russian disinformation. The FBI and the DOJ have agreed with that assessment. And I was in a press briefing at the State Department on Wednesday, and I asked Secretary of State Mike Pompeo if he agreed with those organizations, those intelligence agencies' assessments of the fact that this was not Russian disinformation. And here's what he had to say.
Amber? Good morning, Secretary. Thank you.
Yes, hi.
Multiple former intelligence officials, as well as U.S. ambassadors, have stated publicly that they think the recent stories about Hunter Biden and his emails are the products of Russian disinformation. However, the DNI, FBI, and DOJ have all said they have not seen intelligence stating that that's the case. Does the State Department concur with their assessment?
You know, when I was a CIA director, I always preferred that people defer to the intelligence community about matters best known to them. I saw DNI Ratcliffe's statement. I have every reason to believe he's got it exactly right.
Thanks.
None of these people, of course, are going to use these statements from our intelligence agencies in their reporting. Instead, they're going to talk about the fact that these are all people who are influenced by Trump, or maybe they are under the thumb of Russia themselves. People have already started spreading conspiracies about how DNI Ratcliffe is apparently just a Trumpian asset who is going to cover up anything that could be damaging to the president. And even outlets that are not going with the Russian disinformation angle are still finding reasons not to cover the New York Post story. NPR, for example, which is paid for by your tax dollars, has released this statement claiming, "We don't want to waste our time on stories that are not really stories, and we don't want to waste the listeners' and readers' time on stories that are just pure distractions." I'd like to know how exactly this is just a pure distraction. I think that the American people would love to know if the former vice president was using his time in office in order to enrich his son's finances. Because the whole point of this, the whole allegation that is being released through these emails, is the idea that Hunter Biden was given this position and given a lot of money for the reason that he had access to the vice president of the United States, and that the vice president could supposedly prevent his business partners from getting in legal trouble or other various forms of trouble because they would have the protection of Hunter Biden's father. And this email that suggests this meeting is a huge part of that. And since then, even more damning emails have come out that have talked about holding $10 million for the big guy. And a former business partner of Hunter Biden has confirmed that the big guy refers to Joe Biden. And there are other emails where Hunter Biden negotiates his salary, and it's basically confirmed that his value to the company is being able to provide this access to Democratic politicians and people in the White House so that these foreign entities, these foreign business organizations, can avoid any type of legal trouble or malfeasance. And it's crazy to me. Well, it's not crazy. It's crazy, but not surprising, I will say, that all of these media outlets are trying to turn this into a nothing burger, have tried to claim that it's disinformation, or have just ignored it entirely because they don't want to damage Joe Biden this close to the election. Their intentions and their bias cannot be any clearer than it is at this current moment. And just running through a few other things that have been revealed over the course of the last week related to Hunter Biden, which I think are important, is that this shows pretty definitively that Joe Biden was lying when he said that he never discussed business with his son. And just as a refresher, let's go ahead and watch that clip.
Hunter said the only thing you said to him was, quote, "I hope you know what you're doing."
That's exactly right. He's a grown man. What I meant by that is, I hope you've thought this through. I hope you know exactly what you're doing here.
Meaning what?
That's all I meant. Nothing more than that, because I've never discussed my business or their business, my sons or daughters, and I've never discussed them because they know where I have to do my job and that's it, and they have to make their own judgment.
Then there's a claim by Rudy Giuliani, who was involved in the procurement of Hunter Biden's laptop, where he claims that it is filled with child porn, essentially. It allegedly has compromising photos of a 14-year-old girl. And Giuliani claims that he has turned this in to the FBI and to the Delaware State Police. Watch his interview about that.
Let's face it, it's Biden, the father, who's on the ballot in 2 weeks. Anything else other than what we've seen so far tying him to Hunter's business?
Yeah, two major things that I found. In addition to this, which basically says that Biden was getting 50% of the bribe money, which makes sense, actually. Well, this is really a very, very sensitive one. There's a text message to his father in which he says the following, and he's discussing his sister-in-law, who for quite some time was his lover. And he says, she told my therapist that I was sexually inappropriate. This would be with a unnamed 14-year-old girl. When she says that I FaceTime naked with the unnamed 14-year-old girl, and the reason I can't have her out to see me is because I'll walk around naked smoking crack, talking Tom girls on FaceTime. When she was pressed, she said that the unnamed 14-year-old girl never said anything like that, but the bottom line is that I created and caused a very unsafe environment for the kids. This is supported by numerous pictures of underage girls.
Rudy's involvement in this obviously made him a target of the media, and the new Borat film includes a scene with Rudy where he is apparently duped into a fake interview. And the claim that was floating around this week was that he goes to a hotel room with the female interviewer and apparently pulls out his private parts. And there's a screenshot that alleges to show that. But people who have actually seen the scene claim that that's not what's happening. It appears that Rudy was actually tucking his shirt back in after removing a microphone, which I can confirm if you run a microphone up your shirt like I do now, and you're wearing a button down that's tucked into your pants, then that's a necessary thing that's going to have to happen. That's not very uncommon. There are very weird things that happen with clothing and things like that when you're getting mic'd up to do interviews. But of course, this was another distraction by the media to try to pull attention away from the email scandal and make this about Rudy Giuliani, who, again, they claimed was peddling Russian disinformation. And now what the media can't hide from is a statement that came out this week from Lieutenant Tony Bobulinski, and he was a business partner of Hunter Biden's. He released a statement that was posted by John Roberts of Fox News, and he talks about the fact that these emails are not the product of foreign or domestic disinformation, and he says that's insulting to him as a very high-ranking veteran. And I'm going to read to you guys a little bit of his statement because it really is kind of a smoking gun. He said, what I'm outlining is fact. I know it is fact because I lived it. I was brought to the company to be the CEO. The reference to the big guy in the much publicized May 13th, 2017 email is in fact a reference to Joe Biden. The other JB reference in the email is Jim Biden, Joe's brother. Hunter Biden called his dad the big guy or my chairman and frequently referenced asking him for his sign-off or advice on various potential deals that we were discussing. I've seen Vice President Biden saying he never talked to Hunter about his business. I've seen firsthand that's not true because it wasn't just Hunter's business. They said they were putting the Biden family name and its legacy on the line. He continues, once I realized that Hunter wanted to use the company as his personal piggy bank, I took steps to prevent that from happening. He says, I don't have a political axe to grind. I just saw behind the Biden curtain and I grew concerned with what I saw. The Biden family aggressively leveraged the Biden family name to make millions of dollars from foreign entities, even though some were from communist-controlled China. So there you have it, straight from the source. These emails are real. The big guy is Joe Biden. He was involved in Hunter Biden's business and was apparently using his position in order to make a heck of a lot of money from foreign sources. This demands investigation. Senate Republicans are apparently looking into this. But this is a very concerted effort by the media, by Democrats, and by the big tech oligarchy to silence what is a very obvious and disgusting sphere of corruption surrounding the former vice president. And the American people are not going to let this go. Conservative media is not going to let this go. We are going to continue to chase this story down and try to get as much as possible out because the American people deserve to know if someone is in politics for 47 years and is using their position to enrich themselves with foreign dollars, that's a huge scandal that needs to be investigated and they need to be held accountable for that. Still related to the Hunter Biden story, I'd want to give a quick shout out to the Washington Examiner's Susan Ferriccio because she took on CNN's Brian Stelter in amazing fashion this week. They were on a radio show together on the BBC and they were talking about the Russiagate story related to Trump as well as the Hunter Biden email story. And Brian Stelter got up on his high horse like he likes to do and was complaining about the fact that the emails could not be verified. And Susan Ferriccio had an amazing, epic comeback where she pointed out that the media didn't have these same standards when they were reporting on the Steele dossier a couple of years ago. So where did they come from? Watch.
There is anything real in them.
Yeah, but that didn't stop any from reporting the Mueller and the dossier and all that stuff.
I know you're bitter. I understand that you have a lot of resentment about
this. Now we have ethics. Okay, now we have ethics.
Don't you dare. Don't you dare act like newsrooms didn't have ethics in 2017 and 2018.
Well, I know they did. Well, you can don't dare me all you want, Brian. I've been doing this for 30 years. So say whatever you want. It's my view. And I have a right to say it.
That the news media was unethical with Mueller?
It was so satisfying to hear Brian get pummeled by Susan, and I think she really handled that interview perfectly. And Brian Stelter was not the only journalist to get absolutely destroyed this week. CBS's Leslie Stahl, who was interviewing the president for 60 Minutes, has revealed herself to be basically a massive fraud. She went into this interview with the president woefully unprepared and very unprofessional. And the president ended up walking out of the interview a bit early and decided to release the full unedited version himself before it could air on 60 Minutes. I started watching some of the clips from the interview And I am very disturbed by a lot of what I saw, because the journalistic ethics and really just basic fact-checking in this interview are missing entirely. I don't know what Leslie did to prepare for this interview, if she did anything at all, if she's even been reading things on Twitter, just like the complete bare minimum, because there were so many things she got obviously wrong, and her attitude throughout the entire interview was that she clearly was there to play a gotcha game and that she was trying to be the opposition party. So one of the major things that irked me about the interview is she got into a spat with the president about whether or not the Hunter Biden emails are verified. As we covered earlier in the podcast, former business partners of Hunter Biden have confirmed that the emails are real. There's been no evidence that they are fake. And yet she repeatedly claims to Trump's face that the emails cannot be verified. Watch.
And you think it's the biggest issue to campaign on?
I think it's this. I think it's one of the biggest scandals I've ever seen. And you don't cover it.
Biggest,
you want to talk about?
Well, because it can't be verified.
You want to talk about insignificant things.
I'm telling you.
Of course it can be verified. Excuse me. They found the laptop. Leslie.
Can't be verified.
What can't be verified?
The laptop.
Why do you say that?
Because
even the family hasn't. The family on the laptop. He's gone into hiding for 5 days. He's gone into hiding.
He's preparing for your debate.
Oh, it's taken him 5 days to prepare. I doubt it. Okay.
All right.
Her response to Trump asking why they can't be verified is because they can't. That is what a literal child says when faced with a question that they cannot answer. Then she claims that there's no evidence that the Trump campaign was spied on, which it's been very well documented in multiple reports that Carter Page was repeatedly spied on. There were multiple FISA warrants that were renewed time and again. And there were other members of the Trump campaign that were spied on, like Michael Flynn and George Papadopoulos. And the FBI was actually setting up spies or confidential informants to go and talk to various members of the Trump campaign and try to get them to incriminate themselves in relation to Russia. So I don't know where she got that claim that there's no evidence of that either, but go ahead and watch.
The biggest scandal was when they spied on my campaign. They spied on my campaign,
there's
Leslie.
No real evidence of that.
Of course there is,
no.
It's all over the place. Leslie,
sir,
they spied on my campaign and they got caught.
Can I say something? This is 60 Minutes. And we can't put on things we can't verify.
No, you won't put it on because it's bad for Biden.
We can't things we can't verify.
Leslie, they spied on my campaign.
Well, we can't verify.
It's been totally verified.
No.
It's been, just go down and get the papers. They spied on my campaign, they got caught.
No.
And then they went much further than that, and they got caught. And you will see that, Leslie. And you know that, but you just don't want to put it on the air.
As a matter of fact, I don't know that.
Okay.
And you're out
there. So why don't you get back to your interview and let's go.
Then, in another clip, Leslie claims that there's no proof that Hunter Biden received $3 million from the wife of the former mayor of Moscow, which was detailed in a Senate Intelligence Committee report. And in her questioning of President Trump, she actually cites that report numerous times, but then refuses to believe another piece of evidence that's in the report. So she's undermining the report that she is citing in the earlier part of the question. It makes no sense at all. Watch.
But that's what
you've
told
discredited
me.
Yourself.
You told me that.
Leslie, you've discredited yourself. When you say that you're not going to cover Biden, you're going to ask him what flavor ice cream he has, okay?
That's not
instead
me.
Of why did Hunter get $3.5 million from Moscow? Instead of why is an energy company paying your son $183,000 a month or whatever they're paying him, and he has no experience in energy, you discredit yourself.
How thick do you have to be to use something as a source when it supports your position and then turn around and attack the source when something from it is cited that you don't like? It's an absolutely absurd thing that she does there. Then she contradicts herself again because she complains, one, about the fact that the Hunter Biden email story is being talked about so aggressively, suggesting that the American people don't care about things like that and it's not a real story. And she accuses Vice President Mike Pence of insulting 60 Minutes by treating the interview like a campaign rally and not really answering any questions. So she has this very high sense of importance, inflated sense of importance. And she's on this soapbox about how the president and the vice president treated this interview like a joke. But there, during the course of the interview, she asked the president about the fact that he calls people names. And she asked Mike Pence about the fly that landed on his head during the debate. So two questions that obviously the American people don't really care about, are not big stories, and are really just things that she's using to, I guess, try to pad the interview. And yet she's going to turn around and accuse them of treating this like a joke. Watch.
Bring a passion and a strength and a determination to put America first.
Mr. Vice President, this was not a rally. This was not just a campaign speech to the public. This was supposed to be an interview. And the same with the president. And I feel that you both have insulted 60 Minutes and me by not answering any of our questions and by giving set campaign speeches that we've heard both of you give at rallies without answering our questions.
CBS should be absolutely embarrassed by this interview from start to finish. This was a complete disaster for Leslie Stahl. And yet, of course, they're going to try to make this into some huge victory because they got the president's goat and he got upset by this extremely biased questioning and really just the lack of fundamental knowledge about today's issues by Leslie Stahl. So they're going to use that as evidence that they won this interaction, that the president cut the interview short and decided to release it before they could. But this is one of the worst examples of journalistic just complete lack of integrity that I have seen in a while. It is a horrendous interview, and everyone involved should be completely ashamed of themselves. While the Democrats and the media are complaining about Russian disinformation when it comes to Hunter Biden's emails, they themselves are falling for Iranian disinformation related to the Proud Boys. There were a series of emails that were allegedly sent from members of the Proud Boys to people warning them that they better vote for Trump or else. And it turned out, according to the FBI and the DNI, that these emails were part of an Iranian disinformation campaign meant to sow division ahead of the election. Watch.
This data can be used by foreign actors to attempt to communicate false information to registered voters that they hope will cause confusion, sow chaos, and undermine your confidence in American democracy. To that end, we have already seen Iran sending spoofed emails designed to intimidate voters, incite social unrest, and damage President Trump. You may have seen some reporting on this in the last 24 hours, or you may have even been one of the recipients of those emails.
Multiple prominent media outlets fell for this ruse, and now that they've realized they've been duped, are complaining about the fact that DNI Ratcliffe identified this as an anti-Trump disinformation campaign. And they're saying, well, we don't understand why these Proud Boy emails would be damaging to Trump. And it's obviously because the media has routinely tied Trump to the Proud Boys and tried to make this out to be a violent white supremacist group. So if this group is found to be sending threatening emails to potential Democratic voters, then the media is obviously going to take that and say that Trump had inspired them by telling them to stand back and stand by during the debate. So the intention is obviously for the leftist media to create this new divisive campaign blaming the president for violence or potential violence across the country. It's really funny to me that the left continuously sees the lack of irony in the fact that they're constantly accusing other people of spreading foreign misinformation, but they are repeatedly the ones who fall for it. I mean, they're falling for this Iranian ruse while accusing the right of Russian disinformation by sharing Hunter Biden's emails. And then back in during Russiagate, they were accusing right-wing content farms of spreading Russian disinformation, and we had CNN showing up on this poor old woman's lawn accusing her of sharing Russian memes. And then meanwhile, the left was peddling the Steele dossier, which has been confirmed to be at least partly from Russian misinformation sources. And they were spreading that across the media, taking that as proof that Trump was being blackmailed by the Russians, and suggesting that the dossier was verified. So the double standard that they show in accusing people of foreign influence campaigns and then falling for such influence campaigns themselves tells me that a lot of this is just projection. They are routinely being duped by foreign sources. They are perhaps some of the least informed and most credulous, gullible people on the planet. And so they accuse everyone else of being as stupid as they are so that they don't feel so bad about constantly having their leg pulled by Russia, Iran, and all of these other countries whose goal ultimately is to sow division and create chaos heading up to the election, which the left gladly gives them repeatedly by spreading all of this fake news. The internet is going after Chris Pratt again because the Avengers star opted not to participate in a cast fundraiser for Joe Biden. And Chris Pratt has come under fire before because he's, well, a white male Christian, which is basically the golden trio of things that make you an evil Nazi, according to progressives on the internet. He also recently married Katherine Schwarzenegger, who's also a Christian. And so therefore, they have created this very horrible satanic union, according to SJWs. But Chris Pratt does something that few celebrities do nowadays and is very admirable, which is that he stays out of politics. And one thing that surprised me after this Joe Biden fundraiser information came out is that his cast members actually defended him. Zoe Saldana, Mark Ruffalo, and several other Avengers team members, Robert Downey Jr., all came out in defense of Chris Pratt, noting that he is an incredibly good person. He's a Christian who actually embodies the principles, and he's someone who just doesn't like to get preachy about politics. This only angered the internet warrior censorship crowd, cancel culture group, even more, as they decided to go after these people and accuse them of covering up the fact that their friend is a Nazi Trump supporter. People were hurling racial epithets at Zoe Saldana and accusing her of committing blackface. She is a black woman for supporting Chris Pratt. And it basically just descended into an overall disaster. But I think it's important to remember that Twitter and the internet is not real life. And I think most Americans are probably finding Chris Pratt's position on politics very refreshing. And they probably think it's really nice that there is at least one actor out there who seems to be open to religion, in fact, follows his religion, and is willing to stay out of politics and not lecture people like the rest of Hollywood. That is something that is just so rare to find nowadays. So I definitely applaud him for, even though he did the opposite of taking a stance, he took a stance in the sense that he decided not to follow the crowd and do the easy thing, which is just to go on the Joe Biden fundraiser and protect your career. It is much harder for celebrities nowadays to stay quiet or to be an open Republican or Libertarian because there's this idea, of course, that silence is violence. And if you don't speak up, then you're perpetuating the racist evil system that is created and perpetuated by Donald Trump. So all around, good news for Chris Pratt. I hope that he sticks to his guns and doesn't give in to the woke cancel culture crowd that is currently coming after him and his colleagues. That's it for this week's episode of Unfit to Print. Thank you guys so much for watching. Again, if you haven't already, go ahead and subscribe to the Daily Caller's YouTube channel, hit that notification bell, and search for the podcast on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if you'd like a 10% discount on a subscription to the Spectator's US edition, you can go to spectator.us/subscribe and use my discount code AMBER. Thanks so much for watching, and we will see you next week.